Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
So I'm Brenda Goliano, and I've been at Canando for a number of years, learning and studying and practicing Zen. Thank you for joining, everybody. Can you hear me like this, if I speak like this, a little bit louder? Okay, perfect. Okay, great. thank you for coming out and online. It is nice to see all of you again. Thank you for coming out this evening. Today, I will talk about receptivity, and why I think it is essential to our work in the Zendo and out. As children, we often are first observing and quickly copying everything we see in our parents, other adults, and the children around us. It is a natural part of learning. Once we observe something, we naturally try it out and see what it feels like. Over time, we might modify it to suit our individual needs and predilections. In the Zendo, we often come with many preconceptions about what sitting meditation is and how to engage in it. We might believe that once we sit on a cushion, our minds will become clear and peaceful. How surprised we are that this is actually not so. In fact, we might find that sitting is quite difficult, as simple as it is, because it requires us to drop everything else that we think we are and need to do. So how do we end up with receptivity? When all is said and done, when we are done fighting the monster or the monkey in our heads and finally settle down, we simply begin to notice what is there. And I think that verb notice is a very important one. And we might notice a crack in the wall. Perhaps we might notice our breath slowly becoming quieter, more peaceful, maybe less peaceful. There might be some tightness in our knees or hips. There might be the gentle sound of birds in the morning, or our neighbor snoring. Many things we notice. And that is all. At first, our mind might begin to turn to conclusions. I need to change position. I need to get up. Oh, I forgot to go to the bathroom. When will this be over? Or on the other side, I hope this never ends. I want to do this more often. This is really important. Many things like that. And then after some time, when we run out of thoughts or drop our thoughts or thought formations, as sometimes they are referred to, again, we notice what is there. There might be emotions, feelings, perhaps long ago repressed or pushed down, or perhaps never even having seen the light of day, that suddenly emerge. My dear mother, could I have loved her a little more? My old friend, I must call him or her. I wish I hadn't said that. The movie can be very intense and strong for a bit. And then it might soften and gently fade. And slowly we come back to the birds and the cushion and our posture. So it is really when we stop doing whatever it is that we are doing that we are able to notice. While we are busy with something, some agenda, whatever it is, perception cannot really come in. We are not able to see, as Suzuki Roshi once said, things as it is. I don't really like the phrase letting go, which often is used in this context, because it implies that you have something that you are then letting go. However, it is really more like realizing that you have nothing, so there is really nothing to let go. When you really notice the details and the sensations of fame, wealth, importance, leadership, there is really nothing there of any substance. It is simply people engaging in the best way they know how, sometimes skillfully, sometimes perhaps not so skillfully, sometimes helping one another, sometimes maybe hurting one another. Sometimes it is in the name of resources, is often talked about when people go to war. Jobs, territory, religion, etc. Sometimes not even that. Sometimes it is in the name of being right. That's really the worst, isn't it? And often that happens with those that we hold nearest and dearest to our hearts. So you are right. You win the argument. Great. Good for you. Now, it does not mean that this should be an excuse for taking advantage of people. That again can be unskillful and lead to more suffering on our part and those of others, either taking advantage of or allowing ourselves to be taken advantage of. But receptivity allows us to pause for a moment and be in the presence of something much more profound than all of this. In fact, it is always there. Some call it Buddha mind. Some call it the Tao. Some call it God. It is inherent in our very being and in this existence. A miraculous, unending tapestry of unimaginable beauty. I invite you to watch the sunset or the sunrise, depending on your sleep schedule, for a week straight. and tell me that this is not so. Perhaps watch a young child playing, or a dog walking on the street, or someone pouring you a cup of coffee at Starbucks. Perhaps this is why we like to go for coffee so much, even though it costs $5. We are able to pause and receive it. In doing so, enter into our inheritance, our most subtle gift of being. So I encourage you to take some time throughout your day, both in the Zendo and without, to receive whatever is there. Simply engage in receiving without judgment, without criticism. As a Buddhist beggar of a previous era might receive the food that was offered them during their travels by their neighbors. With full openness and gratitude. And notice how that happens and how it transforms both giver and receiver. Perhaps that is some of the magic of Orioki when we are in Sesshin, this magic of giving and receiving. In fact, we are also doing it all of the time with our breath. We are constantly breathing in, taking in the magical air and oxygen that our bodies need, and giving out carbon dioxide that the trees and the algae in the ocean can convert back for us, assuming we will keep a few of them around. This everyday miracle happens without any effort on our part most of the time when we are healthy. We simply go about our lives, often not even noticing it. Breathing in and breathing out. So you have with you the tools to practice Buddhism all of the time. In fact, you cannot even leave them behind. They are a part of you. There is a saying in Taoism that once you are on the path, you might leave the path, but the path will not leave you. How can it? It's attached. It is only your awareness that may wander off, eventually to exhaust itself and return to its own essence, your being in this world. Thank you for listening. Diane.
Thank you, Brenda. It's nice to always return to basics. And we've been doing that in our practice period with Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And I have the gift this evening of having two new people come, and I gave them introduction to sitting. And it's so good for me to review what you've just been talking about. We need to keep going back to those basics that you just outlined about our breath and being open and receptive. Would you say you have to be empty in order to receive? Do you have to empty, how can I say it? I feel like often there's a lot going on in my head, in my body, and it's impossible to be, I think, have receptivity when you're full of all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So is it like being empty or having a not knowing mind or always be ready to receive? I'm not quite sure
How to do it?
In spite of having sat for a while.
So, for, I don't know if everybody could hear on Zoom, Diane's question was about how do you receive? How do you do it when your mind is very full of something? I guess, can I ask a question back to you? How did you give the two newcomers instruction?
Well, it was about posture.
Yeah.
And being in alignment. It was like, it was about not being in a position that's going to injure you or be so painful that you can't sit. But I did encourage them to focus on their breath, being aware of it coming in and going out, and gazing downward up the wall. And if distracted, maybe counting the breath and coming back to counting the breath. And if thoughts came in, don't try to chase them away, but don't hang on to them. All of this is very good instruction, right? It's the doing of it.
Sounds pretty good to me.
It sounds simple. It's not.
Well, I think though that, you know, you came, you showed up, you met them here, right? And you gave them the instructions that you have been practicing for a long time. And I think they work. You know? I don't know that there's anything different. I think, you know, kind of stopping what we're doing and meeting the moment, you know, it's kind of, I don't know that you can ever stop your thoughts. Like, I don't think that ever happens, because that's what the mind does. And it's only sort of turning your attention to what's happening that, you know, maybe you get a little less enthralled with a movie. You're like, I've seen that. That's a rerun.
Or the patterns on the wall.
Yeah. Let me see who's at the door.
It is a practice. It's not, but it's not easy.
For sure.
And sometimes I feel like I've just begun.
It's pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you. Bringing us back to the basics.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Diane. Dave?
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Thank you so much for your talk, Brenda. Right from the beginning, I've been puzzling over something. Generally, there's another word that we also use for difficulty with our authentic encounter with reality, the Tao, Buddha mind, whatever. We talk about the notion of acceptance, sometimes qualifying it, saying radical acceptance, because it's to distinguish it from like indifference. And I've been, as I listened to your talk, sort of scratching my head about, they don't seem like, receptivity and acceptance don't seem quite the same, but they seem similar in the sense that the loss of receptivity, I mean, you get distracted by your thoughts or something, whereas with acceptance, you're sort of actively pushing away some aspect of reality that you don't want to encounter. And I wonder if sometimes even lack of receptivity may be a sort of disguised form of acceptance, of non-acceptance, where you're getting distracted because you're really trying to reject something, but you won't admit it to yourself. I'm just curious as to how you might see the relationship between the notion of receptivity and the notion of acceptance.
Thank you. That's a great question. I think they are related. And, you know, acceptance, I think, is a sort of a foundational thing. And it doesn't mean, it doesn't mean that you like things as they are, right? It doesn't mean that, you know, that there's people starving in the world and I'm okay with that, right? It doesn't mean that. It means accepting it means, in a way, seeing that it is so and being able to see that it is so, really see all of the nuance of it and being able to accept that this is where it's at right now, you know? And that actually, true acceptance, I think, is, and they talk about this in psychology too, is absolutely necessary for change to happen. Because if you are not accepting things as they are, you can't change them. You don't have a foundation for going to the next step or like, okay, I'm gonna do this differently, right? But you have to see how you're doing it now, right? And so I think accepting what is there, what you may like or not like, is absolutely essential to begin to be able to, probably to receive the reality around you, the attitude of acceptance.
Sounds right to me.
Okay, let's do it then. Thank you. Umar?
When you were talking about sitting in Zazen, these frustrations are coming up. I was, you know, sorry, sometimes it happens. It still happens. Frustrations come up. This and that, and this is a problem, and that's a problem, and this is difficult, and that is difficult. And I was thinking, you know, these are old. Like going back to the ruins of an old city that is been decimated and only ruins are left. And these voices, you know, sometimes come up and they're saying, you know, you're not doing this right. You should be this way, you should be that way. While you were talking, I remembered this whole story that was about this man and his son who were walking through one town with a donkey, and people said to them, I said, look, the man and his son are walking with this donkey, and the son is too so stupid that he's letting his father walk. So they left that town, and father got on the donkey. They got to this other town, and somebody said, oh, the father is so stupid, he's letting his young son walk. So when they left that town, it was just like, you know, the son got on the donkey and the father got off. And then they get to the third town and they said, oh, look, both of them are so stupid that both of them should be on the donkey. So they both got on the donkey, right? And what happens is the poor donkey couldn't even walk. He started slowing down. So father got disgusted with it. Oh, you know, let them all go. What do they know? He just picked up the donkey, put him on his shoulder, and carried him. He said, you know, that's compassion. You know? So I was just thinking, you know, just we've been listening to so many people all our lives, and they've told us, oh, this is difficult, and that is impossible, and that's this, and that's that. That we, you know, that has become our home. You know, we keep forgetting that that home is in ruins now. You know, and when you were talking about that, and yet we keep on carrying those ruins with us all the time. You know, and I was thinking this image was coming up in my mind. Every time I go and sit, it'll be like, oh, this is fantastic, and then it goes away. Excitement goes away. Then anger comes up, right? And then it's like, oh, no, not doing this right, you know. What's wrong with you? You know, there's something wrong with you. And that comes up and it's like, okay. But it's all that carrying the donkey around or getting on the donkey, getting off the donkey and getting, you know, being taken away by what other people have been saying. But that sort of has become a home, you know. And to leave that home is what I think I'm coming to understand that soul-sitting is, you know. Realizing that these things are constantly coming up and just looking at them going, oh, I want to go play to a place that there's nothing there, nothing there, nothing there. So just, you know, it's your talk reminded me of that. And you know, it's just like, oh, you know, moving away and saying, okay, like Suzuki Roshi used to say, you know, forget that moment and we'll roll into the next one. Sort of that sort of a thing.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of that, you know, that all of this stuff goes on. You know, it's this constant, you know, it's like if somebody's thrown a Super Bowl in my hand and it's jumping up and down, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah. So.
And I, you know, I think it continues. I don't know, you know, I only have a very limited experience, but I think it probably continues to some extent for at least a long time, you know, but maybe it loses a little bit of its grip on us, you know, over time. You know, maybe that's one of the things that's meant by home leaving. You know, there's the physical home leaving of the monk, and then there's also the leaving of your comfortable way of thinking, you know, of way of being in the world and embracing something that's unknown. There's a scientific, you know, there's a guy who wrote a book called The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. His name is, it's Thomas Kuhn. Kate Kuhn, yeah. Thomas Kuhn, I think maybe, something like that. And but one of the things he says, you know, every new scientific development first was deemed to be impossible, then highly unlikely, and then finally inevitable. So.
I just wanted to say thanks for giving this talk, which just really gets down to the fundamentals that we all are dealing with on an everyday basis. And this is really what it is. You know, just sitting with your own mind running away or you know, just talking or chattering and just bringing it back. And it goes away and it comes back. And it goes away again and it comes back. And after a while, you can just kind of be comfortable with that. You know, you can kind of say, you know what, that's what it does. And it's okay. I'm just going to come back. In this moment, I'll just come back. And, you know, of course, a few moments later, you'll find that you went away again. But that isn't the point of sitting, and I think it's so important to make that statement that it's not to seek perfection. It's just to be with, you know, who you are. It's just to be with who we all are as human beings, and realize that, you know, this is how we live. We, you know, we make discoveries, we get excited about them. Then we discover something new when we go there, and you know, and then we at another point when we come back and say, oh, wait a second, I used to love doing that, or I used to love reading about that. You know, it's just we're curious and sort of jumpy minds. You know, we're people. You know,
we're people.
You know, and so I just really feel I related so much to what you were saying, because this is the experience. And I think a lot of times when you're new, you come in and you think, if I just keep at this, you know, maybe I can, you know, really quiet down this constant narrative that's going on in my head. And then, you know, you get to think, you know, maybe it's impossible for me. And then if you keep on doing it, you realize it's okay. It's okay, that's what it is. you know, and just come back.
Right. Yes, so it might be a comma once in a while in the narrative. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Lee. Thank you. Yes.
I have a question. Why can't be very relevant? So feel free to not answer it and we can discuss later.
Can you speak up? Speak up so yes. There are Zoom people.
Yes. I can speak now. Yeah. My question is about hope and faith. I have been practicing meditation and Zen for a few years and then I skipped a few years and I'm back to it. And my learning has been this practice is so profound and helpful to accept hardship, and especially when we see the hardship around us, when we go through difficult times, to accept that we cannot change everything, to accept the loss and all of it. And then I went through some very difficult situation with my life in the last few years. And this was helpful to some extent to cope with it, but this was not helpful for me to get out of it. And then I found other tools that was more about faking until you make it, like a belief that you can solve a problem, which was kind of opposite of accepting the situation. It's more about putting your mind into like what you want to achieve,
mm-hmm.
what my mind was held.
Mm-hmm.
And work towards them. And my question is that how can we bring kind of a balance to these two sides of the story? On one hand, we want to have goals in improving things. At the same time, we need to accept that they might not. Changing that still it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of how can we
So I'm not sure if I got all the question right. There were a few questions in there, wrapped up in there. So I'll try to explain. Tell me your name.
Nargis.
Okay, Nargis is asking about hope and faith. And one of the things that she noticed was that during some personal hardships, meditation was super helpful. But then during other personal hardships, it didn't seem to help all that much. And what actually helped more was sort of this idea of faking till you make it, of kind of just doing as much as she could in the direction of what she wanted to go. I guess it was a health goal, you said. She found that more effective. So in a sense, it was sort of, she was feeling like it was not accepting where she was at, and that actually helped her get out of the situation, right? So, I think there are some points in what you make. So for example, there is some work around meditation and trauma, actually, where people have, endured big time trauma. Sometimes we have trauma over like not getting the type of coffee we want at Starbucks, and that's not this kind of trauma. It's like real, real trauma, and that actually sometimes being with those super difficult feelings or things going through our heads or reruns of events and so forth can be very painful, and when you're meditating with it, it can get more intense. Okay, so for that kind of a situation, one thing you can do is the meditation can be very short, so only like sit for 5 minutes, or just sit for 2 or 3 minutes if you want, if you can, but you don't need to sit for prolonged periods of time. The other thing is having, working with somebody who is specialized in trauma work can be helpful at kind of unpacking some of that. So it doesn't necessarily mean that more is always better for everybody, right? At all times. And even that same person might come back in a year or something and be able to sit much differently, right? And I think that
even, you know, the goal that you said of faking it till you make it, you know, in any enterprise that we undertake, anything, whether it's, you know, getting from here to home, we have to focus our minds, right, to achieve a goal. And the work of focusing the mind, the work of paying attention, is actually also the work of meditation. So meditation isn't just, you know, blissing out or trying to let go of everything, right? As this is part of the thing. It's actually the work of being present with what's happening and faking it till you make it. So you can be effective, you can take action and still, you know, be engaging in meditation. It's not, yeah, is that?
Different modes of meditation.
Yeah, you
for
know.
Example, like loving kindness, you try to cultivate certain qualities of, you know, loving and metta. So it's not just different ways to use meditation.
Yes, yes, yes. And I want to kind of, there's, you know, Les is here. So I know that one of the points Les has often made, you have often made, Les, is you don't want to think about it like you're using the meditation. You know, it's meditation isn't something that you're using. It's not like a, you know, we tend to like take out your knife, a pocket knife, and use it, right? It's kind of who you are, really. It's sort of like you are the knife. You are the knife of attention. and sharpening that knife that you are bringing to the task at hand. That's really what you're doing. You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Any questions? Okay. Lots of questions, comments. A bit of a time.
Okay.
We have a little more time. Anybody, any other thoughts or comments? Maybe we're good. Okay, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Thank you. This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's kanndo.org.